Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Well, my wonderful audience, we have a wonderful guest. I think this is going to be one of the more interesting shows we've done. I'm going to go out on a flyer. I think this man can hold that up. He is interested in a lot of things that I think all of us are interested in. He's written a lot of books. His latest book is the How to Stop an Emotional Flashback. I mean, how many of us aren't interested in that? I'm still interested in that personally, let alone to help my clients because they're so devastating, attaching to some of the worst parts of our lives, usually often childhood and sometimes even later. But lately, like myself and Ginger, our guest Richard Grannan from Great Britain has gotten interested in seeing these same kinds of oppressive things that we see in our personal lives that give us flashbacks and make us crazy happening in the political arena. And like myself, he made a big decision to risk things and get into the political arena. Richard, welcome to the show. I think that we're going to have a really interesting conversation, and maybe the beginning of more. So pick up wherever you want on all this stuff.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
And by the way, he's a psychologist. He's a coach. He's a Spartan Life coach. And he represents something I really believe in. I think if we're going to dump conventional psychiatry like we must, I think we have to also dump some of this business about, well, I got my PhD in this or that, and just see if you can help people. Mm-hmm. I think coaching is a really huge resource for good people to help other people. But again, here I am interrupting my wonderful guest. So,
100% agree with you. I think, you know, the qualifications are good, and checking people, peer reviewing the research and all the rest of it, it's great. We must have checks and balances, but we mustn't lose sight of the humans that really need help, and they're crying out for help, perhaps now more than ever in where we're at in 2020. And so, yeah, we, you know, I suppose there can be a little bit of ego that creeps in, and but yeah, just being on that, wanting to help people, I think, is the key element. And so that gives me an entryway into starting to talk about politics and not really feeling like I have a right to, because ever since I was a kid, I could wrap my head around psychology, but as soon as people mentioned politics, my brain would switch off. I think, oh God, it's a bunch of old dudes, you know, just endlessly arguing and talking. I don't really buy into any of that stuff. As long as there's food on the shelves, I've got nothing to say. Well, this year we've looked at scenarios where there may not be every resource that we require on the shelf. We've seen widespread rioting across America, unprecedented levels of civil unrest across America, unprecedented levels of civil unrest across the United Kingdom and Europe. And so the promise I made when I was 14 or 15, as long as there's food on the shelves, I won't get into politics, I've kept, really. And so this year I've started to look at it and say, well, what are we doing? Where are we going? And, you know, how do we frame these problems in order to help people as much as we can?
I would love to have you go ahead and maybe just do something I haven't asked folks to do on this show, which is just address people about what they're facing right now from this tremendous experience you have with helping people in this regard, and, you know, just your assessment of what people are facing and what you want them to hear and learn.
So I think without wanting to step out of what I really understand. And so this is both my assessment as a coach and my assessment as a human being. There's two things that are going on here. One is just a culmination, an inevitable culmination of factors: technology, social media, the fact that we've left religion far, far behind us, the fact that fringe ideas are becoming more and more mainstream every day, and a leaning towards a deconstructionist, postmodern view of the world and the problems we face has been incidental. I think it's incidental. And then there is another element to it where I can see a very clear pattern of a deliberate attempt to push people in a certain direction, simply because if you can cause people to abandon their sense of meaning, to abandon their sense of where they are in the world, of where they are in even in history, like history is the enemy now. History is being attacked. Facts are under attack right now. What you can do is you can make them pliable. You can make them obedient. You can cause them to become good slaves in a system where their only purpose in life is to consume. And the end result of that lack of meaning and rampant passive consumerism is huge mental health problems. People are suffering terribly before 2020 came along and landed the issues of 2020 in our laps. Mental, as you well know, the mental health of the UK and of America and mental health globally has been suffering terribly at levels we've never seen before. So I think there's an incidental effect that's at play here that's unfortunately is creating a perfect storm with a deliberate attempt to make people passive, obedient, and reliant on the state.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. What I've been thinking a lot about now is that we're really dealing with a kind of an unleashed, what you would call narcissism. And I've always tended to so far away from psychiatry as a psychiatrist can get. I don't even like diagnostic terms. But the concept of narcissism was well before psychiatry and psychology, really, evolving in mythology and the myth of Narcissus. That really the leadership around the world has lost its moorings, so that very wealthy, very immature, self-centered tech billionaires and are happy to associate with anybody they can make money with. Bill Gates has an office in China. Bill Gates works with Fauci and World Health Organization, and they work with China. And money flows back and forth in all directions. Yeah. So that people now they're lusting for money, and I think more than all else, maybe power and glory for themselves. And I haven't used the word glory before because I hadn't thought about your idea of narcissism fitting into this until I started looking at your stuff. So they're not just looking for what I've been saying, power and wealth. They're looking for glory. They want to be the glorious world leaders and take it all over, and they'll work with anyone. And on the one hand, you have Marxists in China. You have the Chinese Communist Party, folks. That's who runs China. You have Iran. They'll work with anybody. And mainly it's the U.S. who stands in the way of just the whole thing collapsing, because we still have some of our own power and our own determination, but it's cracking. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm hearing very similar things from you that I've been thinking, and I do think the concept of narcissism really helps grasp what these people are about.
Yes, yes.
They're not about love. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're absolutely not about love, and it's interesting you use the term glory specifically. So, with any field of study, obviously, over time, it gets packed with more and more content as more books are released and more research comes out. It's not always better to have more complicated terms. It's not, as you know, it's not. Sometimes we lose our capacity to just wrap our arms around the subject because it's too complicated. So The lust for glory is a good way of describing what's going on here. This is not pure psychopathy. These people don't just want money and power. That's quite basic, primal, bullying, predator behavior. This is far worse than that. It's more frightening than that. It's like psychopathy plus narcissism, plus a desire to be, as you just said, the saviors of humanity. And it's not overstating the case that that's what these people want to be. They don't just want the power. They want to be loved. They want to be worshipped as gods on earth. And that's why they're doing what they're doing. And you can see that with Bill Gates. You can absolutely see it in the way he presents himself, the way he operates, and the way he talks. Monstrous levels of arrogance, mind-numbing levels of entitlement, clearly deeply infatuated with his own false self-image, his own fake sense of self. He's in love with his own narcissistic mirror projection. And I would say it's hard to deny that. When you started talking there, I was reminded there's a term that's fallen out of favor that goes back to the 50s and 60s in psychiatry of megalomania. And I think if we came back to some of these older terms, we'd probably get more insight. These people want to win. They want to be in charge. It's like a little kid who wants to be in charge. They want to be the king of the castle. They want everybody not just to obey them, but to obey them and love them at the same time, which is really dark. It's really dark.
It's really dark, and it's terrifying because they have so much money, these young, particularly this group of people who are the tech giants and who are literally fixed our election over here. I mean, the tech giants did not allow anything but progressive ideas to develop in the social media, and they knocked the rest of people out mostly. And it is. I mean, this is so interesting to think about. I mean, you're actually going to send me back to my book, you know, tinkering with the opening of it.
Right.
This is a very, very important stuff. All right. Let me go back to the original thoughts that you were developing, which was, how does it feel to be a human being whose life is run by megalomaniacal, glory-seeking, power-seeking, money-lusting countries or leaderships, from China to Bill Gates? I mean, what does that do to us?
I think we can say that for sure everybody's in a state of post-traumatic stress, at least. They're probably experiencing the kind of complex post-traumatic stress that the victims of kidnappings or cults would experience. And you can see elements of narcissistic, well, there's no official diagnosis of narcissistic abuse victim syndrome, but people who work with the victim, the targets of narcissistic abuse, there are clusters of symptoms that we see, and they're becoming global. People have clearly been bitten by the toxic reptilian bite, and you can see it in their responses. You can see it in the way people react. They, broad scale, I would say our countries, our nations, our peoples, are showing up as classically as victims of narcissistic abuse, classically as people who are the victims of brainwashing, cult programming, and they have CPTSD and PTSD en masse. I mean, it's self-evident to me.
Now, CPSD is what?
CPTSD is...
CPTSD.
It's a term developed by Judith Herman, who's a professor of psychology now at Harvard, I think, in her book that came out in 1993. And she had observed that...
I actually read that book, and I don't remember the term, that term. Right. What's the C stand for?
C is complex. So
it's complex.
Complex. Right. So the,
I thought
so
my
the
mind
trauma...
probably skipped by that one. I figured it's complex anyway. Go ahead.
So the we know about stimulus and response. With PTSD, you would have straight PTSD. You would have perhaps a singular observable event or series of events that we could talk about in counseling therapy. No problem. You remember, you're an army veteran. You remember when your buddy was killed by a sniper. You remember when an IED went off. So those would be a simple traumatic event with a simple response.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas complex PTSD, you have multiple ongoing complex traumas that you're not fully consciously aware of, and then multiple complex responses that are emotional flashbacks where the body remembers the feeling and not the kinesthetic, auditory, or visual memories. They're not coming up. You're just overwhelmed by feelings of fear, overwhelmed by feelings of shame, but without the link to say, oh, I smelt the same fuel that we used in Iraq that reminded me of the IED. You've got no stimulus. You're just in the shop buying milk, and all of a sudden, massive fear, massive shame. So the person with CPTSD assumes that they're crazy. They assume that the problem is in them.
You know what? I think I actually have some of that from dealing with this stuff. I find that I get those kind of reactions when I find out about a new abuse.
Yeah.
A new craziness is being perpetrated against us.
Yeah.
I feel a stoppage of my thinking. I feel kind of bewildered. I'm angry and I don't know about what. I snap at Ginger, you know, or the dogs or anybody I love. It's like, I don't think it's worth going into to one of the things I just found out, but it's just a new terrible corruption within the journal Lancet. Actually, I'll tell you the kind of thing that right now I'm writing a blog about, and it just blew me away. I mean, I know the journals are corrupt.
Yes.
But, and I know Lancet's published terrible crap to discredit good drugs and to promote bad drugs, all relating to the globalists and their money making. But they've established a commission now, the Lancet Commission on COVID-19. And one of the things they want to do is find out where they really want to put to rest the idea that this thing leaked from China.
Right.
Or was even released purposely, which is actually a possibility. And that presents us with the craziness you're describing, because I think when you're abused, you always wonder, are they doing it purposely? Do they want to hurt me or do they not want to hurt me? And that intention becomes so central. And I've puzzled again and again of why the Chinese might have released it. I can give you many reasons they might have. But then I discovered that the person they're putting in charge of their group, who runs the Echo Health Alliance, is the man they're going to find to say that it wasn't a release from China. He's running it. He actually is deeply involved with Fauci and was getting paid large sums of money to work with China to help China build deadly viruses. I mean, it's like you pick the devil. I mean, this is not even the fox and the chicken coop. This is like the devil in the world. You know, you pick the devil to investigate it. And it just was like, no, not this far. Don't go this far. So I think, you know, you're helping me. I think that I'm getting some of these complex reactions, and then I have to put my mind together on working on them and being able to describe it to people, how bad this is, how do I find the words? And I think people who go through PTSD struggle with that too. They, you know, how do they find the words to let you know how bad this is? I mean, that's certainly one of the feelings many people I work with have. Well, back to you, sir.
I think, you know, it's a completely natural human response. How could you swim through that much evil? And it's not old evil. It's not stuff that happened to some, you know, a client 40 years ago. It's happening to humanity now.
Yeah.
How could you not swim through that and be unaffected? I mean, what kind of a human being would you be if you were completely unaffected by that? So this kind of secondary trauma, I think, is something we really have to take seriously. We're not being cupcakes. We're not being soft. It's that if you look at that stuff all the time, you will get agitated. You will become corrupted.
Yeah.
You will be irritated and go into a myriad of biological defensive responses, because everything you're reading is telling your central nervous system something is wrong. There is a threat here. It's huge. We have to do something. Yeah, what can you do? What can you actually do? You can't kill the tiger. You can't run from the tiger. You can't negotiate from the tiger. You can't hide from the tiger. So yeah, you'll be emotionally dysregulated by that 100%.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I've been blessed with is when I made this switch, I'd be interesting to hear what you say about it. When I made this scary switch from being a conscience of psychiatry, which I have to say with a narcissistic grin, to taking on COVID-19, all of a sudden, within days, I was not as alone as I have been my entire career professionally trying to really tell the truth about psychiatry. Because even most of the people, maybe two or three exceptions, don't want to realize how evil psychiatry is. Those who are trying to reform it, it's just evil. It's wrong premises, wrong approaches, wrong thoughts about people, and so on and so forth. And there are a lot of people thinking about this. I belong to a group of about 250 doctors who communicate with each other. I found a new medical association, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. I've had four or five amazing people on my radio TV show who are talking about these issues. So I want to tell that to folks as one of the ways. There are a lot of people feeling this stuff, thinking this stuff, and joining together. Richard and I are not alone in this, folks. You're not alone in this. There's lots to read, lots to do, lots of people to get in touch with that you could probably even create groups yourself to talk about these things. But on the other hand, be prepared. Be prepared to have your mind boggled by looking at how corrupt it is. I mean, I'm at these moments where I'm tracking things and I'm thinking to myself, well, gee, Fauci sounds like Bill Gates. And then, oh, wait, Bill Gates has a committee to make tons of money from vaccines, and Fauci's one of the five people on it. And then Bill says, I don't talk to the president anymore. I talk to Fauci, and I put that together. How do I get this to people? I don't know what's going on. And they're all tied to communist China, which is bizarre. Yes. You know, Fauci has been supporting the Chinese development of coronaviruses. I've got a bunch of papers on it. A bunch of blogs on it.
Didn't the FBI catch people coming from China with mislabeled coronavirus test tubes?
Yes. I've heard about that, and we don't know what it is or what it was, but it could very well have been being sent from one Chinese lab to an American lab. I'll give you another example of these things that just boggle my. This is therapy for me. This is really good for me.
Well, I'm here. You may as well use me.
Thank you. God bless you. So I'm looking up that Fauci now has been stopped by Trump. 3 days after Ginger and I got some videos out, Fauci was stopped from collaborating with the Chinese. Literally, Trump said, I'm not funding collaborations with the Chinese making violent, virulent coronaviruses so that they can leak them or use them. And so now Fauci's giving money to the University of Texas. They have at Galveston a level 4 lab, one of the labs that can handle anything. So I go and I use a search engine that's a little bit better at times than Google, DuckDuckGo, and I put in Galveston National Laboratory, and then I put in and Chinese. And back comes from 2 or 3 years ago a promotional advertisement from the Galveston Institute, and the heading is the Galveston Institute and the Wuhan Institute. That's the headline. And that's no wonder that's where Fauci. So then I go and I take one more step, and then I find that the U.S. Department of Education is suing Texas for all of their covert connections, University of Texas, including the Galveston Institute, for covert financial connections to China. And my head goes, dear God, what do I do? How do I get it all out of the world?
And if you try to, what will the response be from people?
Yes. Well, I'm putting it out, and so far the response has been amazing. I'm making wonderful new friends. But like you, I'm sure there's like, well, what are they going to do to my YouTube? What are they going to do to my website? Mm-hmm. Well, judging from things I went through when I first took on the pharmaceutical industries, you know, what are they going to do to me? I mean, so, and that's the stuff we all face this stuff if you're on the cutting edge. Yeah. And I think in some ways it's easier. As much as I'm talking about the pain I'm going through, it's easier because you and I feel some efficacy with doing things. You give that marvelous talk that drew Ginger's attention, drew my attention, made me think. And the folks, one of the things I would say is, you know, do things. Talk to friends. Don't so much run from it as acknowledge there's this huge thing going on, but we can love one another. We can be together. Would you talk more about it? I want to keep coming back to that, you know, your observations on what people can do for themselves and stuff like that.
I think in these times, a great act of rebellion, people would think of great acts of rebellion from times gone by. You know, we should all go and get some muskets and go and fire at some redcoats or something. But yeah, it's not. I don't think that will work. I think that they're very well prepared for that. What they're not prepared for is people foregoing their comforts and unshackling their minds from the things that are poisoning them. So if they tune in less to mainstream media, watch less TV, tune in less to social media, which is also clearly a very effective tool for harvesting people's dopamine and brainwashing them ideologically. It is proven. Nobody can doubt that now. If they clean up their diets, if they reconnect with their friends, as you said, if they get a little fitter, if they reconnect to nature, if you can pull your brain back from the matrix reality, from the blue pill matrix reality, and come back to the real reality of the real actual world, there's far less threat in the real actual world. It's all in the world of ideas that has become heavily infected with a virus that is an ideological virus. I think Gad Saad just released a book with this as a concept, that we're in the middle of an ideological infection. The virus is psychological. These ideas are parasitical, and they are out there, but you can pull back. You can go and, you know, if you're lucky enough and you've got some trees nearby, you can go and sit under a tree and listen to the wind moving through the leaves, which might sound absurd to people who are deeply steeped in social media and mainstream media, but that's what we are. That's the creatures we're evolved to be. We're not evolved to stare into TVs and screens and phones and laptops all day. That's not our natural milieu. And so pull back, folks. I would say pull back and come back to each other. We're creatures of communities. We love to be present with each other and to talk to each other and make music with each other and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of comfort and optimism for the future that can be found in these simple things. But we must pull the catheter, the IV out of the arm. You've got to pull the IV out of the arm, which will hurt. If you're an addict, it will hurt, but it's worth the pain. Go cold turkey and break that addiction.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's very articulate and well put. Tell me the name of that person with the book that you just mentioned, the book that it's come out.
Oh, Gad Saad. I think he's a Lebanese. Is he an evolutionary biologist?
I love evolutionary biology as long as it recognizes the spirit. What spell the name for me, would you, and for the audience, if you can.
G-A-A-D-S-A-A-D. Gad.
G-A-A-D.
S-A-A-D.
That's great.
And his latest book, I can't remember the title, but it is looking at the idea of ideas as viruses and parasitical viruses.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of good thinking going on there, but I'm totally in agreement with you. I mean, everybody who's ever heard my show knows how much I love nature and birds and... you know, that's a wonderful thing. And I try to get out and walk every day and look at the gardens, look at nature, look at the trees. And it's wonderful to live in a part of the world where we can do that in upstate New York. Well, we've been talking a while, but we have lots of time left. You're an amazing resource. Do you want to talk some more about your observations on what's happening to us that's making us feel so crazy?
But because they have no individual agency, they will attach themselves to extremist groups, which we're seeing right now with radicalization, polarization, people moving to the extremes. They can't meet in the middle and discuss anything anymore. And the second thing he said is that one of the effects of turning people into statistics is that for humanity, the move will be towards an amorphous average, an amorphous sort of ill-defined sense of equal, a kind of malignant egalitarianism. And I thought, wow, isn't that interesting in 2020, where we see people are literally every day on mainstream media being reduced to statistics as we're hearing these reports of COVID deaths, which, as we all know, are highly, highly pumped. If you read the word COVID and then fell down the stairs and banged your head and died, you would be counted as a COVID death, probably twice. So people are being reduced to statistics, and where we're seeing this kind of rampant, malignant, misguided egalitarianism, which is basically a mishmash of, I think, misunderstood Marxist ideology, and sometimes well-understood Marxist ideology, postmodernism, and sort of radical leftism. And it's all converging in this toxic mess where people who think they're doing good and think they're bringing justice to the world are making it infinitely worse. They're actually damaging the very fabric of reality itself. They damage truth, they damage language, and they're ruining our trust, our ability to meet in the middle and to communicate with each other. So I see those. I thought it was weirdly prophetic of Jung. I just stumbled across this.
It's amazing. Like, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Is that
incredible.
In one of his essays? In one of his essays?
Yeah. I think it might have been on one of his essays, the two essays on psychoanalysis. And there was another one that I read. I will post a comment on YouTube from my channel when I found it, and I'll because I have it in my notes on a different laptop, and I'll actually post the full paragraph, because it's really interesting reading. Really interesting reading.
Yeah, and I'd be honored to have you post your talk on your YouTube.
Thank you.
So far they haven't taken anything of mine down. Just one of the people I interviewed who was just too good a virologist. They had to take her down.
Oh, okay.
she just understood too much of what was going on in the world. What you said earlier is so important about, we have to get back to being what human beings do that's good for them. Mm-hmm. Ginger and I have been talking about it, partly from age. I'm 84 now, so partly from age, it really wears me out to do this stuff. I mean, yeah. I used to just be able to keep going no matter what, now I really need to slow down because, wow, I don't see any cognitive loss, which is like such a blessing from God. Definitely not the energy to fight that. Mm-hmm. At my age, you replace it with, hopefully not cowardice, but wisdom.
Right.
The energy to fight. Because I was a hell of a fighter as a youngster, and I still am in a way, but I just need more refilling now. And so does Ginger, and we live with her mom, and she's 94, although she seems to be just amazingly healthy. Mm-hmm. So folks, accept your vulnerability, is that's what I'm trying to say. Accept your vulnerability. I've been working on accepting mine in the face of all this craziness out there. But keep your ties, develop ties. If you're under 65, and especially if you're under 55. You just have to be careful about bringing it to some older folks. But even for us, it's not like, one of my dear elder friends who thought she had a 75% risk of dying if she got the virus, and probably her risk would be maybe 3%. So, you know, let yourselves get out there, enjoy each other. Don't listen to the powers that be, and in our case, Governor Cuomo. And don't listen to what Fauci says. Think of, if you're a Christian, think of him as the devil. And if you're a secularist, think of him as an evil, narcissistic man who did the same thing he's doing to us. He did the same thing to the AIDS epidemic. He kept decent treatments away from people, probably responsible for thousands of deaths. Inexpensive treatment, same pattern as with hydroxychloroquine. But get back to the closeness. What is your opinion on this way of communicating? Like, I really have enjoyed very, very much getting close to really amazing people around the world, more so than ever before, as a result of the virus and our working together, not on the virus, but on what people are doing to oppress us with the virus and the fears of the virus. Do you feel that people can get a lot out of telecommunication when they can't get together? Do you think it has grave limits? I'm just interested in your opinion about it.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, the effects of lockdowns is that it slows us down. It means that we have to spend more time at home. And quite honestly, some people needed it. It is also an opportunity. It is also an opportunity to think about your life. I know people who've started podcasts. I wrote a new book during the lockdown. And yeah, one of the things that you can do is you'll have time for research and time to communicate with people who you otherwise wouldn't have done. I love this kind of a conversation. I've never had a conversation like this and not had my thinking altered in a positive way permanently, ever. Every conversation like this I have, there'll be something you said or a perspective you've given me or a reflection you've offered, and I'll walk away and in a week's time, I'll still be thinking about it. I'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't actually think of it quite like that before. So through dialoguing like this, we can really add nuance to our thinking. We can really develop our thinking through talking, listening, learning. I think it's, I'm not anti-technology. I'm anti-worshipping technology. I'm anti-submission. And that's really where we're at as a
state. Absolutely. Submission. No, you do coaching. I imagine, like me, you're seeing a lot of people with FaceTime here in the U.S. is what we use for a lot of it, or Zoom. Mm-hmm. My experience has been with people who have a reasonable social connectivity already, that this works wonderfully. I mean, that we can really relate this way. But if a person's pretty isolated, it's hard to get enough without being together. That's sort of my prescription about, or my observation about it. What's your sense? Before this, did you do a lot of coaching long distance? I did only a little bit of therapy long distance.
I would have done probably the majority of coaching long distance, because most of my clients are over in America. But I just think there was a tendency to, as I say, there's people who've started podcasts. I'm getting way more interviews to podcasts than I was at the beginning of the year. And that's because people are doing it. They're doing it more. We have the time, we want to communicate, we want to learn, and I think it can be a really, really good way of forming meaningful connections with people. It's not perfect. I'd rather be sat in a cafe with you or in a bar with you or something, but this is still good. I can still
good.
Learn
yeah.
from you. Yeah.
Talk some about your explorations of abuse techniques in terms of what you're seeing in going on in the global marketplace right now.
Right.
You've been very articulate about that.
One of the first ones, I think, is gaslighting, which most people will be aware of. It comes from the the film was remade. So there's two films called Gaslight. An emotionally abusive husband turns the gaslighting up and down in the house. And when his wife says, "Is the lights going down?" he says, "No, it's your imagination because you're crazy." It's basically like a way of making somebody feel like they're going crazy. A lot of the communication that we're getting from mainstream media is completely crazy making. We also have reactive abuse, where I would say something provocative to you to evoke an angry response in you. And when you inevitably respond in anger, I go, "Oh, look, see, there's something wrong with him. See how he is. He's an angry guy." There's that going on. I see there's a lot of provocation and sort of poking at people going on, especially this terribly psychologically torturous thing of saying to people, "It's nearly over. Just go until Wednesday. Wednesday comes. Oh, no, sorry. It's going to be next Thursday. But don't worry." And then you're out, and then you're in, and then you're out, and then you're in. It's crazy making. It's really traumatic for people to go through this hope, despair, hope, despair, hope, despair cycle again and again. There's another technique there from hypnosis called fractionation, whereby you take the person in and out of trance. What I'm very worried about right now is the more we're fractionated with lockdowns, taken into a lockdown, out of a lockdown, into a lockdown, the more normal it becomes. They have this horrifying Orwellian phrase that they bandy about, the new normal, the new normal. And that's really, we're in that phase now of, as Yuri Brezhnev talked about, we're in normalization. So now this will be normal. Lockdowns will be normal. If you don't want to lock down and go into house arrest, you're not normal, you're a dissident, and you will need to be punished. So there I can see a few examples of very classic narcissistic abuse that would normally be leveraged at the micro level being leveraged at the macro level.
Yeah, I do. I think all of that stuff is going on. When you and I were younger, there was the concept of the double bind, which I'm sure you're familiar with from Bateson and Jay Haley and folks. They talked about things that they saw in the parents of children who became psychotic, schizophrenic. I don't go use those diagnoses, but, you know, children who just lost touch with reality. And then were later, they studied the families of the grown-up children and got them at various ages. And it was very good work. But one of the things they saw was that children would be given totally contradictory communications, like "you're good, you're bad, this was wrong, well, now it's okay," and very, very confusing. And then the child would get upset and not know what to do, and the parent would say, "What's the matter with you?"
Yeah.
And that was called the double bind, sort of a triple bind, but the double is you get these two different communications, but then you get smacked around if you so much as blink your eyes and say, "What the heck's going on here?"
Yeah.
My gosh, I go through that daily. I never thought of that before, because I get one communication, I get another, and then, of course, when I write about it,
yeah,
I'm in danger,
yes,
of a major smackdown. Yes. We have to get over our fears on some level. We have to remember that Americans and Brits, and we come from a tradition of valuing our freedom, our free speech.
Yes.
I think that one of the things that people need to do, and I don't ever urge my clients to go in these directions, but I can do that. I can urge you as the public to do something. You know, don't allow yourself to be afraid to tell somebody you voted for Trump. Don't be afraid to tell somebody you think Fauci's the devil, if you believe it.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to say that no, Bill Gates is not a cute little guy in short pants with a funny little smile. He's a very overgrown, dangerous person who probably made a lot of his money just by taking advantage of people. He does not sound, when you look at his history, like a creative person. He's an opportunist who's just amazing and lucked into the whole Microsoft thing and so on and so on. But we have to stop, being afraid to to say who we are to people and what we believe. And I just hope more and more of you will be doing that in a kind and gentle way. But we just cannot let ourselves be so intimidated and join alternative things. We're going to be, I have an alternative medical association now. That's just absolutely wonderful. It stands up on these issues. They just three of them, the members, just spoke to a congressional committee yesterday morning. And, of course, they didn't get covered. See, but then they didn't get covered by the media. Here's a three men with a great deal to say about the truth about the viruses, and actually establishment people. They were, I think, all of them were trained at Harvard at one time or another. That's it, you know, it's establishment. I add that to myself, right? But mostly it's not. Mostly if you're Harvard trained, you're really a part of the devil's brew, because what did you do to get to Harvard? That was interesting. I had my first year of actual psychiatric training at Harvard, and I had also had earlier training at the Upstate Medical Center during my internship. The Upstate Medical Center residents, they liked to fish and hunt. They had families. They enjoyed life. Everybody went outdoors. They had parties. They were really nice. They understood other people. They didn't use a lot of BS. Then I went to Harvard. And it was like this weird thing, and it relates to all of this, even though it was years ago. Everyone else who was there other than me was probably an A-plus student throughout. I'd been doing other things. You know, I graduated Harvard with honors, but I wasn't where those people were. Mm-hmm. All of them had a huge amount of science, and all of them could not relate. All of them were lusting for power over the patients. None of them would self-reflect. When I pointed out that I just spent 6 months on a psychiatric ward up in Syracuse, where we related more normally to people and so on, we never had any suicide attempts, and we've had four on the ward this year, folks. We got to look at it. The hate just turned on me, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so in a way, we're looking at this cream de la cream, or they think they are, and they're very science-oriented, even if they're not scientists. Mm-hmm. But they're very science-oriented, and they cheat to create science, many of them. And I found that very, very crazy-making to be with those kinds of folks. And those immature people who couldn't relate to anybody but were Harvard residents and could literally, in the middle of the night, if a patient ticked them off, they could give them shock treatment. That happened once on the ward.
Yeah.
Resident couldn't relate to patients. You know, somebody got mad and upset and messed up. So, folks, this is an old-time thing of, you know, that's been evolving for a long time, of technology taking over.
Mm.
The year that I got at Harvard, it was a bait and switch, because I thought I was going to a place that was very psychologically oriented and that did a lot of family therapy. One reason I got in is I really got along with the family therapist. I was already doing family therapy as an intern up at upstate New York.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got there, they actually limited your personal contact with supervisors and patients. There you go. They literally, wow. I used to hijack supervisors because they were these old-time analysts. I knew they were a cult. Analysts kind of a cult, but they were, they cared about folks, and they thought, especially some of the nice ones.
Yeah. What year was that when you went?
That would be 63, 64. 19,
so even there, it was changing the culture.
Well, Harvard was cutting edge.
Right.
So Harvard changed overnight. It was literally overnight. They had a new head of research. They had new rules. You could only see two patients in therapy during your training. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's really bizarre. You could only have one supervisor, and I had several, but, you know, and they liked me because the old folks that were there really liked me, even the younger ones who've been trained to help people. God, we got one resident who is in a lab rat. He's here because he ran a volunteer program at Harvard that impressed everybody, you know.
Right.
So I've never before, you're very health-giving, Richard. I've never before put together that experience of that going someplace and it turned out to be entirely different.
Yeah.
And I got along fine because there were still a lot of leftover supervisors. Mm-hmm. So I had no, I mean, I never had, not a bad experience in that sense, but and that was technology. That was these narcissistic youngsters who done so fabulously in college. They never read a book in those years. It was so important to read feminist books. They never read a feminist book. They never read a Carl Jung. They didn't do anything. They just got A's in courses that I didn't take until I got to med school.
Right.
So this is this technological, narcissistic, that word. I don't think I'll use it in my book. I'll say the glory. Mm-hmm. Those lusting for power, glory, and wealth.
Yeah, the vainglorious megalomaniacs.
Yes, yes. Well, we've got a few minutes left. I'd like to, do you have any you have thoughts that you want to share? We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left, a little more maybe.
But perhaps just that, I suppose, as I said, I'm not opposed to technology. There is an inevitability to technology is dehumanizing. It's in its nature because everything that we create technologically is better than humans. Otherwise, we wouldn't make it. If I could do it better with my hand, why would I use a drill? So that's a stupid thing to do. So it always supersedes humans to that extent. From that perspective, it's anti-human. It's supposed to help us, of course, but many of the things that we build to help us, you enslave us, ultimately. They supersede us. They supersede humanity as a collective, as a concept. And so it makes sense to me that as more and more technological advancements pop up here, there, and everywhere, and we all march forward, that things have this dehumanized quality to them. I mean, anybody who's been to an airport and got on an airplane, what a weird, dehumanizing, humiliating procedure that is now. And God forbid they lose your luggage. You'll never find a human to speak to. You'll have a series of representatives of the great machine, of the corporation that represents the air. But there's nobody there to say to you, yeah, sorry about that. Larry was hungover and he shoved your luggage to Holland instead of France. So we're dealing with facelessness all the time, and we're dealing with a mass of people all the time, never just a group that you can actually see eye to eye, and we're all just expected to put up with it. But I actually think it's enormously traumatic, it's enormously dehumanizing, and it's very, very demoralizing, very demoralizing.
I wrote a blog on Elon Musk, who has, I think, some things to recommend him, but he has now taken the position that we've created this artificial intelligence, which will someday take us over. Mm-hmm. This is his rationale. So he wants to start, he's experimenting with interface within the brain between the computer and the human brain. Mm-hmm. So that we can get more powerful than the technology. I mean, it's such a, the way you put it, this is like that story that you just told. Yeah. It's so much bigger than us. It's taken us over. Now we've got to become like it to do it. Now, folks, there's no way that's going to work. There's no connectivity that's going to work that isn't going to just ruin you and make you more subdued. And I hope maybe someday Elon will learn that. It will do nothing but make you more subdued. There's no good that's going to come out of an interface between hard things and soft flesh like that. It's just not going to work. But it was so much in line. Well, anyway, folks, this is really, really positive. Richard Grannon, that's the best way to get in touch with you for folks.
If they want to see I have a ton of free material over on YouTube. If they just look up Richard Grannon, if they want to connect with me, then the best way to do that is probably through my Instagram, which again is just Richard Grannon. I keep things nice and simple.
Thank you so much for being on the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. This has been a real good experience for me, and I'm just really glad to have you here. And folks, I'm going to beg him when we get offline to come back again soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.